Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
George W. Bush in the 2007-08 financial crisis and a brief history of America's economic development by scholar and historian of presidential leadership Dan Ostrander explores one of the most pivotal moments in modern U.S. history and the surprising bipartisan leadership that helped America recover. Blending sharp historical insight with firsthand experience, Dan analyzes how Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama broke party lines and collaborated to avert an economic collapse. Dan Ostrander is a retired professor of history with 38 years of teaching experience at Butte College. Renowned for his in-depth analysis of U.S. presidents' leadership, he has personally interacted with 9 presidents, gaining rare insights into their leadership styles and policies. Having co-authored works with leaders like President Gerald Ford and President George H.W. Bush, Dan brings unparalleled expertise to American history books. His experiences range from advising on historical political strategy, U.S.-China relations, and monitoring international elections alongside President Jimmy Carter. His dedication to preserving historical accuracy and contextual understanding has inspired countless students and leaders. And Dan Ostrander, author of George W. Bush and the 2007-08 Financial Crisis, is our guest on This Week in America. Welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure for me to be here, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
So much to talk about. It's an honor to have you here with all of your valuable insight. We could talk for days. We're going to focus today on this book, George W. Bush and the 2007-08 Financial Crisis. Let's talk about the inspiration for this. This is one of the most severe economic crises in modern American history. Why did you decide to write this book?
Well, what inspired me was the fact that the public, and I've seen this historically on different key issues, the public really didn't understand what had taken place and why it had taken place and how close we were to a really 1929 depression. And so the media always appeals to ideology and stereotypes. And so I felt it was necessary that the average American citizen gain an understanding of what really happened. They were blaming George W. Bush, the banks, and they came up with all these little short answers to a complicated problem. And so major economic crises do not develop overnight. It's a long building process. When I started this book, I talked to a guy named Joe Coyne from the Federal Reserve, and Joe explained to me about the lag factor. And this is what a lot of people don't understand. And as you can pass all the laws, you can have all the activities you want, but it takes time for the impact of this, of those events to trickle through the economy and to have their effect. And sometimes those effects get compounded as they're trickling through the economy and working their way through. And so this is what I needed to probably explain to people, that this wasn't just a simple thing of the banks getting greedy or whatever the case may be and Bush bailing everybody out. And so on September 18th, three days after Lehman Brothers went down, George Bush made the statement in a meeting with his gang of three, as I call them, identify those in a minute. He said, let's figure out the right thing to do. And I made up my mind that the U.S. government is all in. So I call it the all-in policy in the book, because he says, we're going to do whatever it takes to get this economy back to where it has to go. And he then said, this strategy was breathtaking intervention in a free market economy, and it flew against everything. Flew against everything that he believed in. But he needed to pull the country out of a panic. So it went all against his instincts. But he said this is something he had to do. And so that was key, and he had the vision to see that and the guts to carry it out. So that's the reason that I needed to write the book, was to explain to people that this wasn't an oversimplified problem that just got out of hand. This was a very complicated problem, and it took a long time. In fact, as I point out, it started in 1975 with President Carter and went all the way up to 2007.
It's amazing in the book. I'm sorry, go ahead, finish that.
Oh, no, I was just going to lead into some more material, but, you know, the Congress passed a bunch of legislative acts. And these legislative acts were passed by Democrats and Republicans, and both parties are to blame, you know, for the financial crisis.
You really bring out in this book, the book is George W. Bush and the 2007-08 financial crisis, his vision, the pragmatism you talked about, the resilience under pressure. Talk about that. I would think if someone's writing about leadership and how you go about leadership, especially in this position, this would be a prime example. Talk about the leadership qualities that you saw exhibited in George Bush during this period.
Okay. I use, I guess, sort of as a model. I was on the President's Council of Richard Nixon's library, and I got to know him, I think, as well as most people do. He's kind of private in a way. But anyway, the point is, as Nixon said, there are key 3 points to presidential leadership. First is vision. The second is you got to have the guts to carry out the vision. And the third is you got to have compassion. And with George W. Bush, he had the vision to see what the problem was. So I use a football analogy. It's like a quarterback. A quarterback has to be able to see the whole playing field. And so he's got to see where the open player is. And then he's got to have the guts to throw that pass or to make the play. And then in the process of carrying out this stuff, because they're kind of complicated, you have to always have compassion in dealing with the people that you have to deal with. And so those were the three key points that Nixon felt centered around presidential leadership. And vision is the key. If you don't see the problem, you can't fix the problem. And so Bush saw the problem right away. And so you got to give him credit for that. He put his team together to fix the problem. And Obama did the same thing. And so he gave his team the latitude to do what was necessary and to be creative in fixing the problem in the economy. My wife and I went in October 2008 when the financial crisis occurred. My wife and I got invited by the president to go back to South Carolina in a conference that he held about the financial crisis. And it was real interesting because we're sitting there and it was clear that they didn't have a clue as to how to go about doing this, you know, because the financial instruments were so intertwined and so complicated that they had to try to sit back, evaluate, and try to dissect it, just move forward one step at a time. And so it was real interesting, but they figured it out. And Bush, as I said, had the vision to go after liquidity and turn his team loose. And Obama followed that lead.
And that's another thing. Maybe younger people don't understand how both sides used to work together when we were facing major crises like this. Talk about that, the fact that George W. Bush put aside the fact that a man of a different party was going to be president and be working together. Would this have worked if the two of them had not worked together?
No, it wouldn't have, because it would have been a push and, pull, you know. Sometimes you find that maybe people, I've seen this in different administrative situations where somebody doesn't like somebody else and they don't want to see them succeed. And so they don't want to cooperate with them in carrying out the mission. So they try to develop their own mission so they can get the credit, and they kind of balance each other, you know, pulling pulling a different direction.
The book is George W. Bush and the 2007-08 Financial Crisis and a Brief History of America's Economic Development. The book is available wherever books are sold. The author's website, Dan Ostrander, and his website is danostranderbooks.com. We've got that on the website. You go directly to his website, get information on that, and learn more. We're just touching the surface. The book is really a very vital history book that tells us exactly what happened during this period. Talk about what you learned in writing this. Were there things that surprised you? Because this did, as you mentioned, seem very complex. You've got all of these different mortgages, and they're chopped up, and they're bought, and they're sold, and the jumbo mortgage. You got all this as a layperson trying to follow. It was really difficult. Did you learn anything as you were writing this book as to what was happening?
Yeah, one of the things that really surprised me in writing the book is the federal government spent $444 billion in TARP, and that was the program, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, that Bush's team created. And the team is, was made up of Chris Cox, who was head of the SEC, Ben Bernanke, who was head of the Federal Reserve, Paulson, Hank Paulson, who was Secretary of the Treasury. And so that was the Gang of Three. The Gang of Three put together a package of TARP, Troubled Asset Relief Program, to bail the country out of the various in various issues such as housing and banking and automobile industry and so forth. And it cost $444 billion. And the federal government got all that money back, plus the administrative cost and interest. And one of the other interesting things is they made $403 billion profit for the taxpayers. Plus, that's after they gave away $31.1 billion to people who are in the process of losing their homes. So they couldn't have to afford. They were given away in grants. So a grant you don't have to pay back.
Yes.
So anyway, so they paid back the original amount of money. They made a profit for the government. They saved the they saved the country from a 1929 depression. And then people who were in the process of losing their homes, there are a lot of them that got financial aid from the government and grants, $31 billion worth. So that was really surprising. And I thought sort of a rewarding feeling. Another thing that really surprised me was that Bernanke, I know he was a student of the 1929 Depression. But what I didn't know was that he was a student of all depressions. He studied some English depressions and specialists there. But he went all the way back to our first recession and depression in 1792 and saw what Alexander Hamilton, our first Secretary of the Treasury, did to get us out of that recession. And Hamilton used the Bank of the United States and got liquidity injected back into the economy by using the Bank of the United States. And so what Bernanke did is he used the Federal Reserve as same way Hamilton used the Bank of the United States to get the liquidity back into the economy. So he appealed to history to see how previous people have done it, and then he went out and mimicked that as much as he could. So that was really interesting.
Yes. There's so much behind the scenes, and we lost interest in it after everything was saved. If you said to somebody, with the Troubled Asset Relief Program, did the government at least get their money back? And people would have no idea, and they got their money back and then some. Was this a classic example of how government was designed to work, getting noticing the problem, facing the problem, working together, and alleviating the problem? This is a classic example of how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, it's a classic example of how it's supposed to work, as long as people can get their political differences out of the way.
Yes.
And they have the vision to see what the problem was. It just like, for example, during the presidency of Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, it was a unique election in 1796 where they were running against each other for the presidency. And there was a tie in the election. So anyway, Jefferson became vice president and Adams became president. That would be like Trump president, Kamala Harris vice president.
Yes.
And so there was bitter debate in Congress and between the two men. In fact, so much so that Jefferson, when he was being inaugurated, Adams didn't stick around for his inauguration. He drove out of town at the same time that Jefferson was being inaugurated. So, you know, you have to have people who will rise above the politics and do what's necessary for the country. And you got to put the country first. And that's one of the things that in writing a book with President Bush, and Read My Lips, No New Taxes, one of the things that he pointed out was the office of the presidency is more important than the president. And so your job as president is to do whatever it takes to preserve the dignity and the success of this country. And, you know, what happens to you is second nature. So when he went against Read My Lips, No New Taxes, his staff told him this is probably going to cost you re-election. And he did it anyway. When President Ford pardoned Richard Nixon, it was so painful for Ford to do that, but he knew he had to do it. He was also told that it would probably cost him re-election, but he did it anyway because he knew the country had to heal. He had to put Nixon behind him, and he wanted to move forward. His first press conference, people just wanted to talk about Nixon, and he realized that he couldn't talk about anything that was in national interest because everybody was focused on Nixon. So you got to be able to see the direction the country needs to take. You need to have that vision, and you need to have the guts to carry out that vision and put party politics behind. A lot of people wanted to get a pound of flesh from Nixon. Ford didn't, you know. And so anyway, yeah, you find that that's at different times. And generally, we've been lucky enough to have presidents who had the vision to see what direction to take and had the courage to follow that regardless of party politics.
This book is available wherever books are sold, George W. Bush and the 2007-08 Financial Crisis. One of two books that we'll be talking about with Dan Ostrander on our program. He will be back and we'll be discussing Read My Lips, No New Taxes. His website is danostranderbooks.com. You can link on by going to our website, get information there and order the books as well. It's interesting as you're talking about that, the question that comes to mind is, as the capacity for bipartisanship diminished, are we just waiting for the right leader to come along? Assess where we are today, and if we could work our way out of problems like they did during the Bush administration.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of times when you're in the middle of a hurricane, you know, you can't see the clear skies outside. And I think that's where we're at right now. I mean, I think Trump is doing a good job as president, but I think there are people that are so obsessed with him and the Trump factor. And I think that, you know, probably maybe after he gets out of office and his time passes, the country, sort of like with Jefferson and Adams, you know, we had the era of good feelings, you know, in 1824. So it might take time to get past Trump and have somebody else come in, and then people will appreciate what took place with Trump. You know, one of the things that maybe I shouldn't say this, I don't know. As I said, I am a Trump supporter, but one of the things that, going back to Bush Sr., the office of the presidency is more important than the president. I don't think Trump realizes that. Trump, to him, the office of the presidency and the president are one and the same. You know, and you got to preserve the dignity of the office of the presidency. And yet Trump is selling memorabilia. You can buy a Trump watch, you can buy Trump mugs, you can buy all kinds of Trump memorabilia as president. To me, in my opinion, that demeans the office of the presidency. You know, and it's always about Trump. He's kind of calmed it down a bit. But, you know, people can see what kind of deeds you do. And so I think because of Trump's personality, I think he's created this anti-Trump attitude. And but he is a great president, but he just doesn't have the vision to see the distinction between him and the office. And that's very important, I think, to be more of an effective leader.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes perfect sense. And you have 38 years in teaching. You've got 9 presidents you've worked with, and the time is going in this conversation, but I'd love to continue the conversation. We'll talk about read my book, Reps, No New Taxes. And that will be the next conversation here. All the books available at Dan's website, which is danostranderbooks.com. Are there times you wish you were back in the classroom and you see all this happening now that you really want to get back in front of the class and discuss, get their input and discuss this? I would think that would be a powerful magnet to have the classroom there and to be able to explain this to the fortunate students at Butte College.
Well, one of the things I loved teaching. Teaching was a hobby for me. And I never looked at the clock. And then my last year teaching, the students didn't care about their grades, but I cared more about that than they did. And I started looking at the clock. And I didn't want to be one of those people standing in front of the classroom and because I needed a job, because I didn't need a job. And so I just made up my mind when that year when I did that. I says, okay, this is it, I'm done. But then Chico State has a program called the Ollie program. So I went over there and taught, and you don't get paid, but the students pay to take your class. And the students are older, and there's no units, there's no tests. And so I enjoyed doing that, and I want to go back to doing that once I get this book stuff done. Because the people there are there to learn. And so it's so much fun to share the material with them. And if you don't do a good job, they don't come to class because there's no grades.
So
if you're not teaching them anything, if they're not finding this stuff informative, your classroom's going to be empty. And so I like that, you know, because I think I can hold my own and share material with students and give them insight into society and how it develops and why it develops. And so that's really important to me, is doing that. I quit doing that because I don't know if you'll know about the Paradise Fire, but in Chico.
Oh, yes.
It wiped out the town of Paradise, and I live right below it. And it did a lot of damage to our property. And so I spent a lot of time kind of rebuilding that and then doing this book. And so I haven't had a chance to go back, but I do want to go back hopefully next year and teach an Ollie class about, you know, our financial institutions and maybe about what the book is about. And then also just about the development of our values and institutions as a society, because I think that's really important that students understand how our values developed, why they developed, how they change, why they change. And so they understand what's taking place in society. So I really, as I said, enjoy teaching, and it's really exciting for me.
there is no better teacher. And if you have a chance to sit in that classroom that Dan was talking about, grab a seat, go in and learn from someone who's been there in the front row for 9 presidents. And we'll talk about that further on the next program. I'm going to take a second here at the end. How are things now in the community? You mentioned the fire. I remember that and didn't associate that that's where you, the area where you live. How are people coming back from that?
They're coming back pretty good. Paradise, the town of Paradise has issued a lot more building permits. The town's slowly getting built back up. You know, they're rebuilding one of the elementary schools now and so forth. So I think the town is recovering. They still minus a lot of people because a lot of buildings and homes got destroyed. But it's a slow process, but it's going to be bigger and better, you know, and yes. In the long run, but it's just going to take time. It's still, you know, 2008 and here it is, you know, November 8th. Yeah.
Yes.
November 8th.
Well, I'm glad that on the road to recovery there, that has to be a slow and agonizing process. It's been such a pleasure, Dan, talking with you on the program. Looking forward to the next conversation. Dan Ostrander, our guest on the program. His book is danostranderbooks.com. We've got the link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. My thanks to EC Publishing, LLC, for arranging our conversation with Dan today. EC Publishing, bringing your vision to life with expert editing, design, and marketing tools tailored to your publishing success. This book, George W. Bush and the 2007-08 Financial Crisis and a Brief History of America's Economic Development, available there. And next program with Dan, we'll talk about Read My Lips, No New Taxes. Dan, thank you so much for being with us on the program. Look forward to continuing our conversation. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it and enjoyed it.
It is our pleasure. And we'll have Dan back on the program. The program is This Week in America. And we are back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.